This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. I'm Elizabeth Earle, and it is time for the Kenai Conversation. Our guests this week are Alex Riedlinski, the Executive Director of the Peninsula Art Guild, Marion Nelson, the Guild's President, and Debbie Adamson, the President of the Kenai Potters Guild, who has some work on display at the Kenai Fight Art Center this month. Alex, Marion, Debbie, welcome to the Kenai Conversation.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Nice. So nice to have you guys, especially now in person, since we've all been at the ends of phone lines for the last 2 years. The Kenai Fine Arts Center, like a lot of places talking about the pandemic, closed pretty quickly last year when the pandemic started. But you guys are just getting ready to open to the public for the first time in a year, starting tomorrow night. How does that feel?
Go ahead, Alex. Tell us.
Well, it's exciting. I mean, it's obviously, there's a lot of people have been doing a lot of work for many months to get to this point, and here it is, it's happening. So our first Thursday since the pandemic, and it's a great show.
It certainly is. The Potters Guild has absolutely busted their butt to produce a lot of work, and it's excellent work.
It's been kind of interesting, I'm sure, just being right there and being open to the public and or not open to the public and having folks walk by, especially having been around for as long as the Kenai Fine Arts Center has been around. It's been a couple decades at least that you guys have been around. I'm not exactly sure how many.
Many decades. The building itself was built in the 50s by volunteers and was the police and fire department, and then eventually became then their second police and fire department building came along on Willow Street, and the city rented, leased it to the Art Guild for $1 a year, and we have been in there ever since. And so it's been in existence as an art center for a long time, although there wasn't anything in the building to begin with. It's like, okay, now we've got this building, now what do we do? We don't exactly have a way to outfit it right now, so it's, you know, slowly, it became an art center, and now we've just gone through rehabbing the back room, and it is now a viable workshop room, and that's where the jail is by reference to its location in the building.
Speaking of rehabbing, I know you guys have not been not busy since the center closed. What kind of work have you been doing back there? I know it's kind of been long awaited to get that back room rehabilitated, but what else have you been up to since the building closed last year?
Are you talking about me personally or the guild?
Preferably the guild, but also I'm sure you've been busy too.
Well, yes, we've had plans. We had plans underway and had worked out what we wanted, what we didn't want. And so we took out some walls, part of walls, and it's now, you know, I can't help but say, the cement floor has been ground. The walls have been painted. I was in there painting into the bathroom last night. And a second coat on that, and many other things. Help me remember, Alex, I'm kind of forgetting what we've all... Oh, there will now be a three-compartment sink in there.
New windows,
yeah, things like that. Very basic things, but it's all old stuff, you know. So there's not too many surprises, which was good. We were wondering what the surprises would be structurally, but it's been pretty good.
And a handicap bathroom.
Yes, fabulous. That's the very, very important thing.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things too is when they started stripping the drywall out of the back room, there is that old jail back there that was a functioning jail. And when they removed the drywall, we saw paint like it was painted yesterday, all the measurement marks where they used to take mug shots. And so we asked the contractors to preserve that for us. So it's kind of framed out little section where people can stand in front of it and, you know, something fun for social media maybe, or
so 4 feet is the lower limit and 7 I believe is the upper limit, so there are those light blue numbers on the wall and we're keeping them, of course.
It's pretty cool.
That's fascinating. That building has a really long history, obviously, as the Kenai Jail, and they said it's the original police station as well. And it seems like over the years, just because you guys have been there for so long and stayed so busy being plugged in, both in on the Fine Arts Guild side and on the Potters Guild side, that maybe this year was kind of a chance to reset and sort of move into place some of those dreams you guys had for the building. Because I remember some things that were kind of, they probably could have used some work before the pandemic. Had those things kind of been in the work for a long time, Marion?
Well, thinking about a lot of that what was needed, of course, had been going on forever, but, you know, grant money makes a big difference in what you want to do and what you can do. And so we're doing what we can do right now, and now it's now go on to the next step to seek some grants to deal with the lighting and the flooring in the main gallery, which will be a huge improvement. To have a gallery that has kind of inadequate lighting is bothers us a lot. It bothers us with every show. So we'll have new lighting. We do have new lighting in the back, and it's an example of what can be in the main gallery. So that's very, very exciting to see what is right now in the back and what can be in the main gallery ASAP.
Before I wanted to move on, Alex, you're relatively new to this organization. You've been here for most of the pandemic, right?
Right, exactly. I joined the board just before the pandemic hit. And actually, there's a board member or two that I still have never met in person. We've been on Zoom for a year. It's just bizarre, you know? So I think I should meet everybody Thursday night, finally.
What's this? So would you tell us a little bit about what you do with the Art Guild? You're the executive director, and I believe this is the first time that the Art Guild's ever had an executive director, right?
Right, exactly. So they had been working towards that for a while to try to have enough funds and have enough sort of a plan in place to have a paid employee. And I was new to the board, and they were talking about getting this person in, and over the months I started to sort of realize maybe I could put my name in the hat for that. Because I just knew there's a lot of technical things they needed. Like, for example, we're working on a new website. And in my sort of former life, I worked as a graphic designer, and I had some of these sort of new digital skills that they're looking for. And we could go a long way with volunteer work, but if they could get me in as a paid employee, there's just so much more we could do. Allocate more time to get this kind of stuff done. So I was really happy to fill the position. We're still sort of figuring it out what it means in terms of responsibilities and things like that, but it's really cool. We're a good group right now, so.
Yeah, it's a strong board, and Alex is one of these people who has both the left and right brains fully functioning.
Yeah, what you said before, we were chatting a little bit before the program, and you said you were relatively new to the Kenai area, but you're from Alaska originally, right?
Yeah, from Fairbanks.
So what's different about Kenai from Fairbanks for us locals? Most of us have regionalism opinions, I'm sure, but what's your perspective on Kenai being different than Fairbanks?
Well, Kenai's warmer in the winter, considerably warmer, and I appreciate that all the time. There's a few differences. Fairbanks' art scene is pretty large, very strong. They have those big summer arts festivals, music festivals, and all these kinds of things. Kenai is smaller, but it's very passionate also. Like, people are going to turn up Thursday for sure for this first Friday event. And
first
Thursday event. And Kenai's really, really cool. I love it here.
All three of you guys are working artists. I've seen at least your guys' both Debbie and Marianne's work on display before you guys have been here, and I'm excited to see some of Alex's. This last year has been really strange for working artists, in part because for folks who do more artists and stuff like earrings and things like that, they could move to online platforms pretty easily as a way to distribute their work. But for folks who do more fine arts, that entire ecosystem got pretty disrupted. What was that like for you guys as working artists? Was it easy to still produce work? And if you did, what happened to it, or what happened to your ability to produce art in the last year?
Well, I have not produced much because I was home. If I had to go to the grocery store, I went, but for the most part, I was just at my home. I have a wheel downstairs, and I could throw some things down there, but I just didn't feel excited about doing that. I'm alone throwing downstairs. So I have a friend who lives out in Nikiski, and I would go to his house sometimes, and he's got a studio in his garage, and it's just fun to have somebody to sit with, throw pottery with, and it was just a pleasure, and we got things done, and we could commiserate about what didn't come out well in the kiln, and just really encourage each other to, you know, to challenge ourselves and each other. So it was very enjoyable. We made it through.
The Potters Guild has a pretty healthy membership, if I remember, in a relatively small space over there attached to the Fine Arts Center. And so I imagine when things are in more of a normal sphere, you guys do get very close when you're working in that space.
Indeed, right. And sometimes we're almost tripping over each other, but we're careful. But yeah, it's a small room, but I'm sure, you know, I didn't go in there often at all. Through the pandemic, there were a few people who worked in there, but I'm sure they had plenty of room because, you know, maybe two people at a time, or even often it was one if anybody was in there. So we're so glad things are getting back to normal now and we can resume our wonderful playtime in clay.
Alex, Miriam, what has it been like for you to try to work as artists in the last year and a half?
I seem to be built for that. I was at home just working all the time. I actually spent the pandemic learning how to make etchings, so copperplate intaglio printmaking. With respect to those suffering during the pandemic, it was a pretty good time for me. And I think four more years of pandemic, I could come out on the other side of the pretty good body of work. It was okay for me production-wise. I didn't mind it.
Alex has a big show coming up in Fairbanks shortly, and so maybe as a kind of a tail end of the pandemic, he's finishing up his work. You'll have to talk about that. That's quite an exciting exhibit in as far as the subject matter of the work he's doing. But as for me, producing, I work with encaustic, which has the nickname of hot wax. It's a combination of beeswax, damar, resin, and pigment, and I have my own studio in the backyard, and so I mean, it requires equipment to do encaustic work or cold wax work, and I have all that stuff sitting right there, and I've been looking at that empty building for a long time, have gone in the building probably not even 10 times over the past year. Just go in there, because there's always a little bit of smell from beeswax, which is nice, and so forth and so on, and go right out again. Haven't touched a piece of equipment, haven't done anything, haven't even missed it. How's that? So sooner or later it'll kick in again, but I'm delighted to see everybody else in motion, and certainly the Potters, because that studio is so well equipped and such a great little addition to the area, as well as a place for the Potters to work. I've worked with clay in the past myself, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
It's really interesting that all three of you have such different perspectives on it, with the ability to produce work versus the inspiration to do so. You mentioned the social aspect of that, mm-hmm. Debbie.
Right.
For Alex or Marion, is there more inspiration available to you guys now, or less, or about the same, now that the world is kind of reopening and getting more back to normal, quote-unquote?
Well, I'm concerned about what's going on at the center more than myself, so that's my perspective.
I'm always concerned more about myself. I was inspired.
And we want him to be.
Pretty sincerely during the pandemic, like yesterday, for example, it was a beautiful day. And so on the way home, I stopped by Cossacks for a beer in the sunlight, which is something I wouldn't have done before. So that's partially why I was getting so much work done before. So that's a problem. A little bit of a problem.
Not a bad one, though.
The social aspect of the Potters Guild, particularly, it seems like that's integrated into the show that you guys have coming up tomorrow night. I believe the title of it is "The More We Come Together."
It is. Right.
How did the decisions go into pulling in the pieces for that show, and how does that social aspect influence the name and the subject of that show coming up?
Well, I think the inspiration for that name came to Shannon Olds. It was her idea. Just because we had all been so isolated over that, you know, year and a half. And we're just all of us thrilled to death to be able to come back together again and begin living our lives the way we used to. And I know people feel that all around the world. I just feel like it's just a magnificent opportunity, what we have there at that art center and the Potter Studio, to be able to create and just become better people. for one thing, the social aspect is endearing. It helps us to feel that inspiration to and challenge to just make more beautiful, stronger pieces, maybe larger pieces. There is some yard art in this show, which is amazing to me. And I love the work that Brian Olds has done for this show. He, in particular, because he's a man, and they have that upper body strength. And please don't anybody get mad at me for saying that, but there are some differences between the muscles of a man and that upper body strength that a woman has. And you can tell, boy, sometimes he even stands up at his wheel to pull that clay up. And I watch that and it's magnificent. It's like, are you kidding me? I can't do that. I can't even work with that amount of clay mm-hmm. on the wheel at one time. I can't center it. And I've worked with clay for 20 years. So it is always amazing to me to see what a man can do with clay on a potter's wheel. But it's fun. And you know, we love each other. It's just such a camaraderie there that it's a working organization. Nobody's paid a penny for anything. And we have a complete board, and we have lots of people who come in who aren't on the board. And it's a learning and teaching mission that we have. So it's good. It's all good.
You've been involved with the organization for a number of years, and you said you've been president for 4, correct?
Yes, yes.
Has it grown in those years that you've been part of it?
Well, you know, it has, definitely. But then, you know, as of late, the pandemic hit, and that kind of put the skids to things. But other than that, it has definitely grown. And we've had many potters who have begun there. You know, they were taught by other potters, and then they learned how to do it. They fell in love with the process, and they've bought their own wheels, their own kilns, and now they have home studios. So, and then they kind of migrate out of the Pottery Guild, you know, or the pottery studio that we have, and they have their own setup. So then new people can come in. And so it's just an ongoing process, younger people coming in often, and they learn and they go on to, a lot of them go on to have their own wheels and their own studios and build businesses. So it's a lovely thing to watch.
One of the neat things is that big gas kiln, because that's yes. something that people are not going to have in their house. That's just really requires a group effort. And so to have that available, even if you don't work in the studio on a regular basis, you can at least prepare for that and to participate in the group order of clay then, which has to be the same clay for everybody to fire in that gas kiln, or you'll have some very dynamic explosions. So
that or meltdowns.
We don't want that. So
no.
It serves two purposes. One, the equipment in there is absolutely marvelous for a small studio, and that they have that big kiln, which is a real asset for everybody.
It is. We only use cone 10 clay, which is a high fire. It's like 2,350 degrees. I know. So we let that baby just cool down on its own for a couple of days before we open it. But when the clay and the glaze on top of it is heated to that kind of a temperature, the rolling of the colors of the glaze down and blending, and it's just amazing sometimes the results that you can get. So, and all of that is going to be on display at this art show. So I'm really excited for people to come and see what can be done.
It sounds like there's an amazing amount of chemistry and pyrotechnics involved.
Indeed.
If I tried to tackle it in my own backyard without that community support, I could get into some serious trouble.
With those temperatures, indeed, yeah.
It sounds like the education aspect, or like the teaching aspect you talked about, reminded me kind of what the Art Guild has been talking about getting into with your guys' new classroom that you're installing in the back. And I know that's been talked about for a long period of time, trying to get some classes rolling in the back, because historically, if I remember correctly, the Kenai Fine Arts Center has been primarily a display area rather than being a class area. Is that something you guys are trying to verge into, to adding more of an education aspect?
Well, Alex will be a part of this, because I don't know that I'd say classes, but I would say workshops at this point, and certainly having classes / educational opportunities in the main gallery, too, with guest speakers. And we're always thinking about those kinds of things. Who would we want? Who would be important to the area? And we are an art center that serves the whole Central Peninsula, of course. And this, you know, with, again, the three compartment sink, but also having just more space, you can, having, removing some of those partial walls has made a huge difference. I mean, it looks like a whole new room to us. It's like, how come it's, I mean, it's just, you know how it is in your own home. If you take a wall out, my God, look at there. You've got, seems like you've got twice the room.
And, I, you know, sharing knowledge is important everywhere, but in a small community, it's so critically important. If somebody knows how to do something, they should share it with everyone, you know, especially if it's technical skills and artistic skills. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing that happens sometimes. Somebody teaches a workshop, maybe it's a woodcut printmaking workshop, and then the next open show we have, there's all these new woodcuts. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Getting people interested in this stuff.
There's kind of a, it seems to me that there's kind of like maybe a gap for that, that most of the art classes that are offered for adults here on the Central Peninsula are either paid through the Kenai Peninsula College or through private workshops, or they're sort of smaller, not to denigrate the efforts at the local libraries, because they do some art classes as well for free or community schools. But it seems like something like what you guys are trying to offer, maybe there is kind of an opening there in terms of open availability for artists who want to verge new directions and haven't had the opportunity at the Central Peninsula in the past.
Clearly, and it's an opportunity for us to invite people to come in from, say, the UAA faculty or International Gallery in Anchorage or elsewhere, Fairbanks, UAF, you know, to have faculty members or others come and do workshops, and sometimes that's sort of part of what they should be doing, too. So there's that element to people who are on a faculty. But just, you know, there's some spectacular artists all over Alaska. We know that. So to see who we want, who's available, when they're available, what they're doing, what we have to offer them in terms of a facility, and just how it all comes together, and then, of course, scheduling. So it's always a goal, and now it's an even bigger goal because we have a better space for it.
Yeah, and talking a little bit more about your guys' connection as a group, the Kenai Potters Guild is literally attached to the, yes, Kenai Fine Arts Center. For anyone who hasn't been there, it's just through a great big door. How closely have the groups been able to try to communicate over the course of this pandemic year? Because you guys have had folks kind of coming in and out when availability allows, whereas the Kenai Fine Arts Center has been more pretty much closed down, except to the board members, correct?
Right. We've been Zooming it a lot, and that's you know, gotten pretty old. We'd like to see each other's faces, too, in person, as opposed to that scream.
What was it like to try to communicate to put together this first opening show, since you guys are not really actually the same organization, but you work closely together?
Well, I'm the liaison between both entities, and so Marion and I call each other every once in a while, fairly often, and just check in and make sure that things are going smoothly between both, and everybody knows what time things are supposed to happen and what day, and yeah, we've kept in, mm-hmm, pretty close contact all the way along, so it's been perfect.
And I watched them set up this show, and they don't need a lot of help. I mean, they are very, they know what they're doing.
Right.
It's not our first rodeo.
Yeah.
Are you guys nervous at all about opening up the doors to this thing then?
Just that they don't break any. Nobody breaks anything, you know. Oh, it's a spectacular show. The only thing is, there's a lot of stuff there.
There is a lot.
And I won't say it's crowded, but people need to watch where their elbows are a little bit.
Right.
There's so many interesting and unique pieces that the public is going to want to look at a lot of those things. And that means bending over and looking at them, being fascinated with something big, something small, something unique, since the theme is cookie jars.
Yes.
And there's many, many unique pieces, like a chess set that Brian made.
Yes, which is
amazing. And figurine kinds of things that are quite wonderful. So it's going to, people who are looking at items through this show, they're going to stop and look at it. They're going to want to touch it too, but of course that's really not desired. So I guess if there's any concern is that just watch where you're walking, standing, and where your elbows are.
And I know one thing can be a problem, the over-the-shoulder bag. You know,
oh, yes.
I know that personally. So, yeah, we'll just have to be careful.
Good hint, Deb.
Not to get ahead of myself here, because we are coming up on the bottom of the hour here, and we're going to take a short break just to catch our breaths before we carry on. But cookie jars as a
yes,
theme.
Yes, indeed.
Are there cookies in them?
Oh. Only now, really, if you think about it, it's been a COVID year and a half, and you know, touchy, feely, and bacteria. But we wanted to.
Plus all the COVID weight that I need to lose. No, that is a great topic. I'd love to come back to that. We'll talk a little bit more about the particulars of what's in the show and some of the fine arts pieces like that chess set you mentioned. But for now, we're just going to take a short break. For those of you who are just joining us, this is the Kenai Conversation on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. We are going to take a short break, and we'll be back just after the bottom of the hour. Stay with us.
Yeah. That was a little small.